En 2023, la Fondation Maison des Sciences de l'Homme fête ses 60 ans. Dans ce cadre, un colloque international autour de l'œuvre de Immanuel Wallerstein et sur son impact, intitulé « Capitalisme, anticapitalisme et sciences sociales engagées à l'échelle globale », a eu lieu les 11 et 12 septembre 2023. La table ronde numéro 3, du mardi 12 septembre au matin, s'intitule « Épistémologie, sciences sociales, marxisme historique ». Le modérateur est Jean Coppens.
Alors maintenant, nous allons continuer. Je suis très satisfait que Yann nous ait élargi aux frontières du large monde jusqu'au fond de la Chine et de l'Inde et pas seulement de l'Amérique latine. Donc nous allons continuer avec l'intervention de Gennaro Ascione sur des questions qui, j'avoue, vu leur intitulé et leur résumé, me dépassaient. Donc je compte sur lui pour me faire comprendre ce que je ne comprenais pas, et pour vous c'est peut-être la même chose. C'est pas pour minorer son intervention, loin de là, mais je crois que là maintenant nous prenons la substantifique moelle du mouvement analytique de Immanuel au sérieux, en ce sens que des visions particulières qui nous ont été données à travers l'histoire des concepts, la géographie des lieux évoqués, la nature des noms avec lesquels Immanuel a débattu, doivent nous conduire quand même à analyser en tant que tel le système du système monde et du système capitaliste, qui après tout est le point de départ de toutes ces réflexions.
Gennaro Ascione, Unthinking the Endless Accumulation of Capital, Marx's Mathematical Manuscripts, and the Spacetimes of Capitalist World Economy.
Bonjour. I'm very happy to be here, and thank you for giving me the chance to be in such an amazing company. I feel like in my inner phantasmatic imaginary library. So I see the personification of a lot of people that I used to be with in my library, and this is something very special to me. And in this library, a central gravitational pull is Immanuel Wallerstein. Is an imaginific space that I use as a gravitational pull. It governs centrifugal and centripetal forces like drifts and returns, but it is still there. And I didn't have the pleasure to meet him personally. I only met Wallerstein through this magic operational support that is written word. And his books, his articles, were fundamental in a very particular moment of my life and education. That was during the late 90s, with the participation to the anti-capitalist global movement. And in particular, in those 2 or 3 years that spent from Seattle 99 to the killing of Carlo Giuliani in Genova in 2001. So as the scholars, the mnemotechnic scholars of the Middle Age knew, as strong as the emotion is, stronger is the connection with what you study and learn in that period. And Wallerstein gave us, not just me, but to an entire movement, some keywords. The first that I remember is thinking globally. The fact that you pass to a unit of analysis that is word systemic immediately translates in the relevance that you give to what is happening locally. The second one was anti-systemic. It was beautiful. When you are young and you are anti on everything, anti-systemic, it's the best expression that you can expect. I remember that one of the, maybe the most important techno album in rave culture is called Anti-System. The third thing was a sort of moral attitude that is also political, and it is, you cannot separate freedom from equality. You cannot separate freedom from equality. It is freedom and equality. And you learn how important just a single line can be, like the hyphen, no? And freedom, equality, like a word system, it generates something that is conceptually relevant. And in this particular library, I have a mental order about these works. The kernel of this core is not, is Wallerstein's early writings. I have been focusing on his late writings because this is a sort of attitude, even for Marx, for me, is the same. I love the most the late works of big scholars because part of scholars keep repeating things that they've been saying in the last 40 years. Others, like Wallerstein, are constantly self-critically engaged. And in this self-critical engagement, they open up new perspectives. They are like a big theft of things that are not strictly connected to the kind of horizon that is expected for them. And in fact, what I've learned from him is this powerful strategy in concept formation that is unthinking. And this is a strategy that helps not just to rethink the entire master narratives or theoretical foundations, but also how actually concepts that we currently use are formed in a particular historical and space-time context. It is always contextual. You can universalize it, but as soon as you think that something is not working with that concept, one strategy is to go back to it and see how it came out from the context it was emerging. And so, given the fact that Wallerstein was constantly concerned and engaged with the future, with forecasting, I think that our conceptual apparatus is not working very good. I mean, I'm not very optimistic with the demise of capitalism, but I am even less optimistic with the ability of our available conceptual apparatus to face the challenge of current social theory. So, Wallerstein was constantly concerned with the future, and a lot of his forecasting happened to be concrete manifestation of historical phenomena, and this locates him in a transmodern perspective that he also adopted when he studied the structures of knowledge since the Middle Age, to those great thinkers that engage in very long-run perspectives. During the Middle Age, there was the astronomist or astrologist. At the time, things were not that much separated. How that kind of knowledge worked? It was based on a concept that was trajectory, that was an epistemological understanding of mathematics. It was not just Galileo quantification. It was something much more complicated, some of them called mathesis. Wallerstein adopted this idea of trajectory when he theorized the development of the inner contradictory logic of capitalism in terms of the asymptote, which is a very important notion that he deploys in the Age of Transition, the collective work at the end of the 90s. So trajectory in astrology was, let's say, the conjunctions of planets and how this influenced human lives. Trajectories in world systems analysis is basically connected to the possibility of conceptualizing the asymptote as, you know, a curve touching a line in the infinity. So there is a sort of underlying mental structure that is much more complex and rooted in epistemology than it is often understood. in using the concept of the asymptote, Wollersin was actually exposing and showing what was the underlying structure in epistemological terms of Marx's notion of capital. Marx wanted to produce a science of society, but science in a very profound sense, not in a deterministic sense. Science has the ability to analyze recurring pattern in a very general way. And Wollersin, through the asymptote, showed how Marx was concerned about the possibility of giving to his social science a structure of forecasting. And Marx used what he had in his horizon, in his epistemological, heuristic, and historical horizon, which was a particular moment in the history of differential calculus that was not very, was just acquainted with him. And it is evident when he tries to define the tendency, the trajectory to the infinite of the accumulation of capital, and the trajectory towards the infinitesimal, when he, for instance, explains what is the threshold beyond which capital cannot exploit the biological substratum of the workforce. Marx returned to this point in his late writings. It is something that is, it is not often considered, because these mathematical manuscripts that he wrote in the last 2 or 3 years of his life can look or very scholastic, because he tries to recover the dialectical history of the differential calculus, or very obscure, because it is not clear why Marx, at a certain point in the last 4 years of his life, starts to learn mathematics. Actually, there is a letter that Marx wrote to Engels when he says, "I must confess that my notion about differential calculus were very naive." So I don't want to open a very dramatic scenario, but Marx was very worried that this entire theoretical construction about the accumulation of capital was, in a sense, conceptually misplaced. So, in fact, these mathematical manuscripts have a very interesting editorial history. But the problem is that even if Marx didn't get to the point, he opened up a problem. How do we conceptualize the logic of capital? How do we face the enigma of the logic of capital if we deploy a different understanding and of what is the infinite, what is a trajectory to the infinite or to the infinitesimal? Following this idea of unthinking, I try to enter this enigma of the historical formulation of the concept of capital accumulation, and something pops up to my mind in a very straightforward way. And it is that basically Marx was in within the European horizon of ongoing and apparently unlimited colonial expansion. So the geographical imagination of thinkers, of European thinkers in the 19th century, was basically entirely within the construction of this horizon. So Marx translated the potentially unlimited colonial expansion into the mathematical terms of the infinite of the differentials. Let's remember that the last territory to be stepped on by a European colonizer was in 1902 in Antarctica. So 20 years after Marx died. So while Marx was concerned about his naive knowledge of differential calculus, it was entirely within the horizon of colonial expansion. Wollersin moved beyond this conception. In fact, he theorized something that emerged yesterday as well. He theorized that the end of capitalism, of world historical capitalism, would have been connected to the impossibility of the lateral expansion of the geographical expansion of capitalism through incorporation. And in order to enlarge this view, during the 90s, Wallerstein looked at a lot of epistemological source because he felt probably the need to rethink the basic categories of social science. In fact, he moved to different understandings of the space-time. Brodel with the temporalities, evenementiel, linear, or cyclical. Prigogine and Stranger with complexity theory and the irreversibility of the arrow of time and the bifurcation, systemic bifurcation that is a particular moment in space-time. But also from theology, let's not forget Paul Tillich's notion of the distinction between the chronos as a quantitative time and kairos, the time of epochal action, which still discloses another path in the reconceptualization of the space-time inward economy. One limits in Wallerstein's understanding of the epistemological relevance of the global, it has been underlined yesterday in another communication, is that at a certain point he realizes that the lateral expansion is not more possible, but there is a missing link, that is how do we translate this condition into a different conceptual formation that allows us to cope with this condition, with this historical condition. So, according to Wallerstein, capital works through the continuous creation of what is outside of it. No? So, capital against non-capital, capital against labor, or if we put it in Polanyian terms, we could use a capital as not nature, if we think in terms of second contradiction of capital and fictitious commodities. So how do we reframe this dialectics between what is capital and what is not capital when the global sets the scene for the impossibility of further incorporation? For Wallerstein, the impossibility to incorporate new territories, in fact, was the asymptote. Among the many different ways that we have today to conceptualize this different understanding of the space-times, many of them comes from non-Western epistemologies, but still they dialogue in a very direct way with different conceptualization that we have available, for instance, in physics or in geometry. And Mollier Boutang just mentioned one of them a few minutes ago, that is topology, which basically tells us that we can conceptualize the space-time as distance would be irrelevant to the operation of a social logic. It is something that, in a sense, Arrighi and Silver touched in Chaos and World Governance when they analyzed the way that financial capitalism can operate instantaneously in different areas of world economy. And this is an immediate critique to the notion of spatial fixed time fixes or structural invariances. And so topology means that we can imagine the global space as fragmented, but still working through the same logic of accumulation, but in a different space-time understanding. That might be another concept that we have at our disposal to rethink the accumulation of capital. It is the discrete space-time. Not the continuous space-time, but the discrete space-time, which basically means that two phenomena can correspond to the same logic, even if these phenomena are not contiguous. No? This can happen everywhere, responding to different logics, and this also implies a sort of fragmentation and scattered understanding of the space-time of world capitalism. The discrete, together with the idea of topology, conjures in a sense to unthink the endless accumulation of capital outside the logic of continuity. This might seem counterintuitive, but yet we usually theorize continuity and the flow of capitalist accumulation as if the alternance of continuity and discontinuity are part in the same dialectical set. So discontinuity is where where devaluation happens, so that the margin of profits can be reestablished as they were before. But the discrete space-time actually opens up a different possibility to think discontinuity outside the dialectics of continuity. Discontinuity, what does this mean? Discontinuity in the dialectics with the continuity is the basic Schumpeterian model of the flow of capitalist world economy, no? Where there is this alternance. It also comes with a sort of hagiography of the creative power of capitalism, no? This idea that there is a sort of fascination with the creative and the creative power of be always self revolutionary, no? This is an inheritance from Marx himself. I don't like it, so I would focus on discontinuity outside continuity, and the discrete space-time operates in these directions because devaluation, predatory operations, extractivism, destruction of values can be theorized outside the logic of continuity, outside the logic of creation. Destruction in a discrete space-time can be theorized in se and per se. Destruction in se and per se, regardless of the logic of continuity. Capitalist destruction in se and per se that can be translated into destruction, discrete destruction of use values. So I take the opportunity to share these thoughts with this amazing audience and wonder how the history of the modern world would appear if instead of the history of the self-reproducting logic of the accumulation of capital, who would we start narrating the history of the discrete destruction in se and per se during these centuries? And this sort of idea of epistemology of interruption of the discrete is something that reminds me about the relevance of the suspension in space-time. So instead of the trajectory and the continuity, we could take a moment for suspension as if it was a sort of eclipse. And so, yes, the split space-time as a sort of eclipse in the logic of continuity of the accumulation of capital. Grazie.